discover the power of positivity. Identify your gifts. Then plan and execute your passion. And ultimately, thrive exponentially in life. And most importantly, in business. On Sudden Eye Impact with your host, Lee. The environment you put me in, greater than, greater than. The circumstances that I'm faced with, greater than, greater than. The environment you put me in, greater than, greater than. The circumstances that I'm faced with. Yes! And your life counts, and enthusiasm definitely makes a difference. Hello, and welcome. You're live on the Sudden Eye Impact Show. I'm your host, Lee, coming to you from the DFW Metroplex. And on the Sudden Eye Impact Show, we have fun together, we learn together, and we encourage one another. On the show, we discuss a variety of topics, such as personal responsibility, accountability, support system, accountability partner, creative vision, belief systems, the power of belief, the power of thought, the power of partnership, the power of words, entrepreneurship, visionary leadership, creativity, consciousness, awareness, being the observer, service, innovation, finances, relationships, goal setting, goal attainment, at one minute, to name a few. On our show, we share concepts, principles, processes, and systems that work if you work them, that deliver good and great results. The show's mission, purpose, and intention is to discuss simple, basic, fundamental ways to help everyday people experience more fulfillment, satisfaction, enrichment, enjoyment, health, mental health, and overall peace through utilizing your own latent resources that lie dormant within you. The show is spiritual, inspirational, and motivational, expressing powerful content that anyone can take and apply to any area of their life to change their life for the better and continue to work to change their life for the best. On today's show, I will have a distinguished guest. Her name is Pip McKay. She is a highly respected thought leader and pioneer within the fields of personal transformation and coaching based in Sydney, Australia. Over the last 20 years, she has created the entire fields of matrix therapies and archetypal coaching. These tools have assisted thousands upon thousands of people to discover their passion and purpose, clear negative influences from their past, and fulfill their potential. They have been taught throughout Australia, the United States, United Kingdom, Europe, China, and many other places, and most recently, Israel. Although having dyslexia as a child, Pip went on to become an award-winning teacher and best-selling author of two books, The Eight Principles of Achievement and Love and Happiness, and Four Tribes, One Earth. Pip is a highly sought-after speaker and writer, appearing regularly on both TV and radio. Just hearing Pip speak is transformational, and seeing her live is life-altering. Quote, to put the world in order, we have to first put the nation in order. To put the nation in order, we have to put the family in order. To put the family in order, we have to put our hearts in order. Period, end of quote. Confucius. Quote, when a man undertakes to create something, he establishes a new heaven, as it were, and from it, the work that he desires to create flows into him. For such is the immensity of man that he is greater than heaven and earth. Period, end of quote, Paracelsus. Quote, thoughts create a new heaven, a new firmament, a new source of energy from which new art flows, period, and end of quote, Paracelsus. I dwell in the midst of infinite abundance. The abundance of God is my infinite source. The river of life never stops flowing, and it flows through me with lavish expression. Good comes to me through a myriad of avenues, and God works through me in a myriad of ways to bless me. I now open my mind to receive my good. Nothing is too good to be true, and nothing is too wonderful to have happened. God is my source. Nothing amazes me. I give freely and fearlessly into life, and life gives back to me with fabulous increase. I am indeed abundant, and I am indeed blessed, and so it is. I dwell in the midst of infinite abundance. The abundance of God is my infinite source. The river of life never stops flowing, and it flows through me with lavish expression. Good comes to me through a myriad of avenues, and God works through me in a myriad of ways to bless me. I now open my mind to receive my good. Nothing is too good to be true, and nothing is too wonderful to happen. God is my source. Nothing amazes me. I give freely and fearlessly into life, and life gives back to me with fabulous increase. I am indeed abundant, and I am indeed blessed, and so it is. I dwell in the midst of infinite abundance. The abundance of God is my infinite source. The river of life never stops flowing, and it flows through me with lavish expression. Good comes to me through a myriad of avenues, and God works through me in a myriad of ways to bless me. I now open my mind to receive my good. Nothing is too good to be true, and nothing is too wonderful to have happened. God is my source. Nothing amazes me. I give freely and fearlessly into life, and life gives back to me with fabulous increase. I am indeed abundant, and I am indeed blessed, and so it is. You're live on the Sudden Eye Impact Show. I have a distinguished guest today, Pip McKay. She's a star to the. She's a teacher to the stars, and further than that, she's a teacher to the all-stars, and beyond that, she's a teacher to the superstars. With no further ado, myself and Pip McKay is about to execute a Q&A session. Hi, Pippi. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Dwight. How are you?
Wonderful. First of all, I want to just thank you for your investment and sacrifice. I know your schedule is precious, and time is of the essence. And I believe that you answering these questions will be sort of like a guide to get the audience to challenge their beliefs and challenge their habitual thinking and get on the path to transformation.
Thank you, Dwight. Well, it's actually a pleasure, so not much of a sacrifice. I feel very passionate about these things.
Awesome. So we're going to start with question number one. What are your personal beliefs?
So my personal beliefs are that we're all born with a passion, purpose, and genius, and that our role in life is to find out what that is and express that to the best of our ability in the world. And we also have another responsibility, and that is whatever our passion is, we need to be able to build a bridge from our passion to people who may be interested in that passion but don't know what it is. So that's also our responsibility. So that's what I believe, and I believe that every single human being on the planet has their own special genius, their own special contribution to the earth, and that we make the earth a better place when we do that.
Well stated. Question number two, where did your personal beliefs originate from?
Well, I think there's a few places. One, my mum was very supportive of what I wanted to do. And to begin with, I wanted to be an actor. And she never said to me, you've got to get a sensible job to make money. She actually said to me, do what you love and the money will come. And so it's interesting, I pursued acting, and in the end, I didn't become an actor. It wasn't really where I was meant to go, because in acting, you know, you have to speak about other people's lines, you need to follow directions, and I'm very rebellious in nature, and so that's not a very easy thing for me to do. And so it was much better for me to become a speaker, and when I became a speaker, I was able to write my own scripts, say whatever I wanted, and have a lot greater freedom. And so that suited my personality. And I think, you know, this is one of the things that happens with our passion and purpose. The very first thing that we might be drawn to isn't necessarily it. It's like we're wandering around in the dark attempting to find it. And then when we do find something similar, we're like, yes, yes, a bit of that, but not all of that. And then we keep searching and keep searching, and then we find what is the exact fit for us. And that's what happened to me. So I think on the one hand, I was very lucky to have a mum who was supportive of that. And on the other hand, I have a very rebellious nature. So I really do need to, you know, follow the beat of my own drum, because I don't have much capacity to follow other people's drums, and I don't have much resilience for unhappiness or boredom. So I need to be able to do what makes me happy, because otherwise I can't really tolerate my life. And those things all coming together really allow me to have a belief about passion and purpose in doing what I love, because I can't really do an alternative. So I have quite an extreme personality, and lots of other people don't. So they find it easier to tolerate things that they don't really want in their life. But for me, it's quite intolerable. So I have to really do what I love, because otherwise I'm miserable. And that really pushes me forward to follow the beliefs that I have and to do what I love.
Wow. Do you have concrete reasons for your personal beliefs?
Yes, I have really seen it in my own experience and also out in the world. I really think that unhappiness is not a disease. I think unhappiness is a message from our spirit that we're not doing what we really want to do, or we're not doing something that we're meant to do. And so I think we need to change things in order to become happy. And when we're happy, it's like our spirit's reward that we're on track and we're doing what we're meant to do. Unhappiness can also, of course, be because we haven't recovered from trauma or negative events in the past. And unhappiness can be an invitation to heal things in the past. So I really believe that our emotions are like messengers telling us whether we're on track and whether we've healed our past. And when we do that, then we have happiness as our reward. So I really believe that our emotions are something very important for us to listen to, and that we need to find ways that we can adjust our present situation and heal the past so that we can have happiness as our birthright. I really believe that that's what we can have, and that's been my experience in my life. And even my husband, Will, who came from a very poor Irish background, and he was really taught that really life is a misery and that you shouldn't search for happiness. It's a luxury that you can't have when you're wanting to survive. And so he has a much greater tolerance for unhappiness than I do. But even in his life, where he's had all that training from his parents about not do what you love, but sacrifice what you love so you can do what you need to do to survive, that was his programming. And yet I've watched him doing more and more now what he loves and stepping more and more into his genius and developing and growing, and watching his happiness really soar and his capacity for love to soar. So I just see in my world, whether it's me who was growing up in a family that says, do what you love and the money will come, or whether it's him who's saying, you know, forget about what you love, just do what you need to survive. But in both cases, when we do what we love, then the happiness is there as the reward. Otherwise, you know, life is a mediocre misery. And I don't think that's what we were born for. I think we're born to shine our light. I think we're born to create a path for others to follow and make it easier for others. And I think we're born to have an open heart with a powerful soul that allows us to do what we want.
Nicely stated. Question number 4. Pip, do you believe you have limiting beliefs in certain areas? If so, please explain and give us one example, if you don't mind.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I believe that we're all on a journey of continuous growth and betterment. And so even though we may have really supportive beliefs compared to perhaps other people, there's still always a place to go. I believe that our potential is limitless. So there's always something limiting us in the material plane that we need to overcome to further our evolution, because I think our evolution is an endless process. So one of the things that I feel I've had limited beliefs around is my personal health. So I had to, after, you know, the abusive childhood that I had, that then developed into chronic fatigue when I was 19. And I was very sick with that. And that has been something that has continued to come up. And what I find is that when I push myself too hard, then I get a chronic fatigue flare, and that, you know, kind of forces me to rest. So I think that my limited belief is around really that in order for me to have a successful life, I have to be pushing all the time, and that's a limiting belief. I think I can have a successful life which is in balance, and that it is definitely possible to have cycles of rest and activity and still get where you want to go. So so at the moment, though, when I'm healthy, I push myself too hard, and then I need to do extreme rest in order to balance out. But I really think that I've got a limiting belief there about success, and that I need to push my body a bit too hard for success. So that's something that I'm working on at the moment, to find that balance, because as I said before, I do have quite an extreme personality compared to a lot of other people I know, and I'm extremely passionate, and sometimes that gets away with me and I do things that aren't good for my body. I push myself too hard. So yeah, so that's what I'm working on currently, and I'm looking forward to that coming into balance so that I don't have these waves of you know, brilliant health and then suddenly finding my health deteriorating. So yeah, so I think I need to honour my body more as a temple for the soul, and allow it to have a bit more rest.
Well stated. Pip, how do you change a personal belief or beliefs if the personal beliefs are no longer serving you?
Yes, I think this is really important to be able to change our personal beliefs. And a lot of people are attempting to change their personal beliefs through willpower rather than through understanding and healing. So every belief we have is just a little child in us who gained a belief during a time in our life when we didn't have the resources we needed to get what we wanted. And so what happens then is our younger self created a belief there to attempt to make sense of what is happening for us. So for instance, if you had an experience like I did where I had sexual abuse from the age of 4 to 8, so I was very young then, and the child brain tends to just have black and white thinking and then just generalize. So for me at that time, I had been grown up in a family where, you know, you do what adults say, and there was no capacity to discern between an abusive adult and a good adult who might be my parents. So my parents were really good people. So as a child, doing what they said is probably a good idea. But when I came across an abusive adult, doing what he said was not a good idea. But because I was so young when the abuse started, only 4, I didn't have the capacity to make that discernment in my mind. So it was all very black and white thinking. So when I was a teenager, I just decided that I would never obey an adult. I just would do what I thought was right. But a teenager doesn't have a lot of life experience. So sometimes just doing what you think is right as a teenager without any advice or guidance from adults can be a problem. So we can see I would swing between obedience and disobedience rather than being able to go, okay, there's times when certain adults who I trust, who have proven that they have my best interests at heart, that I could go and understand their opinion and be able to incorporate that into my decision making. Not always obey or always rebel, but be able to use my discernment, my mind, to understand what was going to be right for me with advice. So we can see in that set of circumstances, it's not that it's a bad belief. It's just a belief that is out of date and was just a child mind attempting to understand and cope with the abuse I'd experienced and protect myself so that I never had that abuse again. So what we would do is go back and have a big chat with that child and give that child some resources, some external resources, like a really great adult who can help that child understand what's going on, and help that child find a middle path between obedience and rebellion, which is real more adult maturity and growth. But that's something that child needs to learn. So that would be an external resource, and an internal resource of being able to follow intuition and follow one's soul rather than one's ego. And so that's a process of changing beliefs where you would go back in time, you would meet your younger child, where that belief started from, the source of that belief started from, and you would give that child some more resources and help that child grow up with a lot of love and understanding, and then come back to now with those resources. So that's the way that I would change a belief. But most people are like, oh, I've got this negative belief. What's the matter with me? Oh, gee, I shouldn't do that. I'm going to just discipline myself in order never to do that. And the trouble with willpower is it runs out. The moment you're really stressed or preoccupied with something else, you don't have the willpower to follow your new path. So I think it's much better to go into the default position of the computer, if you like, into our mind, to help the internal child who was the source of that belief know that the child was just doing the best that they could with the resources they had at that time, attempting to protect themselves, attempting to cope with situations that are too complex for a child. So of course, that child needs some help, just like if a child was afraid of a monster in the cupboard, a parent would come in and help that child understand that there's nothing there, nothing to be afraid of, and cuddle the child and, you know, maybe even let the child come and sleep in their bed for a little while until they feel safe, and then be able to go back into their own bed, understanding that there's really not a monster there at all. It's just their own imagination being carried away. So that's how I would change a belief. And I think it's important to become conscious of the beliefs that we have. And when we've got a moment to be able to go and resource that child. Of course, some beliefs have more aspects to it than other beliefs do. So some beliefs are really simple based on just one event, but other beliefs are beliefs we've picked up from our parents, our grandparents, and sometimes they can be contradictory because our parents and grandparents might have different beliefs from each other. And then we can find there's a whole matrix of really complex beliefs that do need to be dismantled, and that will be a longer process than just a simple belief clearing. So, yeah, that's the way I'd approach changing beliefs.
Well stated. Pip, why is having a goal consistently important?
Say that again for me.
Why is having a goal consistently important?
Yes, I have quite perhaps unusual beliefs about goals in terms of personal development, because I think if you set a goal and that goal is based on old programming, then achieving that goal might not give you what you're expecting. So, for instance, if you came from a background of poverty, for instance, and you set a really big financial goal, but you had a belief that you have to sacrifice yourself in order to achieve that goal, then you might find yourself burning out in order to achieve that financial goal. And even though you might have that goal so that you can spend some more time with your family, in the process of getting that goal, you may be spending a lot less time with your family. And then your family's all grown up without you and you don't have the relationship that you might be expecting. So I think that it's really important when we set a goal, we need to analyze what the purpose of that goal is. So say we're setting a financial goal because we want to have better health and we want to spend more time with our family. We really need to make sure that we understand the purpose of that goal. Then we need to incorporate that purpose into our goal. So then we need to say something like, how can I make more money whilst I'm spending more time with my family and spending enough time to ensure that I've got great health? how can I do that? And then set a goal in that way. And it may be that you're not getting your goal quite as quickly as you would if you were spending 100% of your time focusing 100% on that goal and only that goal. But you're much more likely to get the purpose of the goal incorporated at the end, because I've seen a lot of people achieve a financial goal and find that in the process of getting that goal, they've got a divorce, their kids don't know them, and their health is massively deteriorated. And so they're very, very disappointed with the goal, and they're very disappointed with goal setting. So I really believe that in our life, any goal we set needs to incorporate concepts of success, love, happiness, and health. And we need to look at that and check whether that goal is working. We also need to look at finding more balance in our life. So if we're setting, you know, if we had a really strong financial goal and we ignored our family, we might need to set a very strong family goal and relax the success goal for a bit whilst we reestablish strong relationships with our family before it's too late. So I really think that when we set a goal, if we're moving forward and just new at goal setting, it's really important to set a goal in the success quadrant, in the love quadrant, in the happiness quadrant, and in the health quadrant. And that we need to make sure that there's time each week dedicated to that. So there might be more time dedicated to, say, the career goal and the love goal if you've got a family. But we need to make sure that every time each week we're still putting a good set of time towards our health goal and we're doing something that makes us happy. And many people don't really know what makes them happy. And this is really important because happiness makes our love goals much easier. If you feel happy, it's much easier to be a good person to be around for your family compared to if you're martyring yourself and sacrificing yourself all the time. Then you come home all grumpy, all empty, and you've got nothing to give your family, or it just feels like you're running on empty. If you're happy, more people are attracted to you. So your success goal is also easier, particularly if you have a business and you're selling or marketing yourself in any way, shape or form. But even in a career, if you're looking for promotion, somebody who's happy and people love being around is much more likely to have team cooperation, much more likely to attract, you know, influential people who want to spend time with them. So I really think that in goal setting, we need to have some balance. Back in the 80s, there was this whole thing about, you know, take massive action consistently to just one goal. And for a lot of people, they ended up coming completely out of balance. So this is what I really believe with goal setting. And then with that goal setting, I also believe, excuse me, that we need to have time out from goal setting as well. So I really believe that Sunday should be a time completely away from technology. It should be a time just to be able to follow the yearning within rather than the goal that you've set from the external. So there's time to follow your intuition, there's time to get new creative ideas, and there's time to connect to your soul, because sometimes your soul will have other ideas than the goal that you've set. So sometimes we do need to sacrifice the goal that we've set in order to follow the promptings of our soul. And so I really believe that on a Sunday we have no distractions, no technology, no phone, no things that we have to do. We rest and we follow the promptings and the urgings within. And I think we should then extend that to a Saturday as well and have true weekends off and have true time after work off as well to really connect with ourselves and connect with our soul.
Profoundly stated. Question number 7. Pip, by your observation, what is the highest function that a man or woman is capable of participating in?
The highest consciousness, did you say?
What is the highest function that a man or woman can participate
function.
In?
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. I really believe that the highest function we can participate in is listening and following the urges of our soul. I really believe that God, the goddess, the one, whatever we call that, in whatever religion, that spark is within us. And this is what makes us human. And in order to evolve and in order to be at our highest functionality, we need to follow the urging of our soul and dedicate ourselves to that. And I believe that when we follow that, the rest of our lives will come into balance. If we think we're following the promptings of our soul and it means that we're, you know, not being loving to the people most important to us in our life, who deserve it, by the way, not everybody in our life should be there. Sometimes I think there's people to ensure aren't in our lives anymore if they're abusive or narcissistic people. But basically, if, you know, we've got good people in our lives, our soul will never prompt us to do anything that is against being loving, but also being powerful and being able to contribute what we're meant to this world. So our highest functionality is to follow our passion and purpose, to heal our past, and to ensure that we contribute our unique genius to others.
Nicely stated. Question number 8. Pip, by your observation, how much of your actual potential are you currently expressing? Please explain.
Well, I believe that our potential is limitless. So I believe there's endless possibilities. And, you know, in a human life, even the most extraordinary human life, I believe, is only expressing a fraction of our potential. So I really don't know whether I could put a number on it, but in my life, I feel extremely blessed that I am doing exactly my passion and purpose, that I have the time, the energy, the support to continue to be creative and to be a magical being who's making the impossible possible and creating magical transformations for myself and others. So I'm really excited, happy and passionate about where I currently am. And because there's a limitless future, I'm constantly inspired and excited about what can happen next. How many more people we can reach, how much more magic I can discover in the world, in other people, in nature, and in myself. So, yes, so I'm really happy with what I'm expressing right now of my potential, and I know that there's so much more, and so it's an exciting adventure.
Nice. Question number 9. Pip, what is your way of viewing reality?
Of being in reality?
Yeah, what is your way of viewing reality?
Viewing reality. Well, I believe that there's two things going on. So there's reality itself, and then there's our perception of reality. And I suppose there's three things going on. There's the interaction between reality itself, our perception, and those two things come together to create what we want our reality to be. So, you know, there's such a thing as gravity. But say I want to fly. You know, it'd be crazy for me to just jump off a building. You know, I'm not going to fly. So we have to just have a bit of reality check with that. But that doesn't mean I can't fly. If I'm creative enough, I can build a plane and I can fly, or I can hop in somebody else's creation and I can fly. So I believe that you can have whatever you want to, and you do need to take into account what is going on in the material plane currently. And when you take that into account, you can create something that will allow you to have what you want in the face of what is currently going on. So that's what I believe. And then we can create our reality the way that we want to. But we do need to interact with what is currently there to create what is in our mind as a vision or an ideal. And we do need to do that as a work. So it's not just, oh, you know, I believe the grass is cut. I believe the grass is cut and I don't have to do anything about it. Of course, I've got to go out there and cut the grass. But if I don't have a vision of what the grass looks like cut, well, then I'm probably not going to go out there and cut it. So this is what I believe. I believe that we create our reality from the visions and beliefs that we have and from the actions that we take.
Nice. Question number 10, how does reality personally work for you, Pip?
Well, I just love my reality, and I even love when things don't work out exactly the way I expected them to, because I feel like that's an invitation for greater creativity. So a lot of people think of creativity as art and drawing, and if they're not good at, you know, art, drawing, poetry, music, then they don't think that they're creative. But in actual fact, creativity is an adaptation process. So, you know, when we as human beings, you know, there was an ice age, we had to adapt to that ice age. And if we didn't have creativity, that's the capacity to imagine something different or imagine what we want in the face of what we're seeing, then there wouldn't be anything that is creative. And I personally love creativity. So the reality out there stimulates my personal creativity. And I think that when we create something that changes our reality, that this is magic, this is alchemy, this is the way that we become the magicians of our life. And that's my highest ideal, my highest love, is this idea of magic, that we live in a magical world, that world can be transformed by our thoughts, by our heart, by our passion. And that there's also another creative being out there, whatever we want to call that. I like to think of that as the one mother, father, creator, God, goddess, whatever you like to call that. And that also interacts with us, and sometimes it throws us curveballs, and we then become even better when we adapt to those curveballs, and that everything that happens to us is for our greater growth and learning, and that we evolve through that process. And so I always think that anything that happens, even if at the time I'm like, oh gosh, I can't believe this has just happened to me. Like, what was going on there? But then it's like picking myself up and going, okay, what can I create out of this? And because I teach personal development, whenever there's a curveball that's thrown at me, and at first I just don't know what I'm going to do about it, you know, I've got that moment where I'm dumped because it's outside my comfort zone, or it's outside of my known reality, or outside of my current resources, I celebrate that moment and think, okay, this is now truly going to help me grow and develop to the next phase because I don't know what to do. So that's going to ask me to reach, to seek for a higher connection with spirit in order to discover something that I don't know yet, and to grow my capacity. And I always think, and at the very least, it's going to be a good story I can tell other people when they feel stumped as well. And so I always think that's almost like a mantra. This is an invitation to creativity. This is an invitation to growth. This is an invitation to evolution. And then it's up to me. How creative am I going to be? How inspired am I going to be? How evolved am I willing to become?
Nice. Question number 11. Please explain to me your personal dynamics of thinking.
Of thinking. Well, I believe that the conscious mind is just light of awareness. And so I like to send my thinking to two places. One is my heart and the other is my soul. So I like my conscious mind to come into my heart and go, okay, you know, what is the urging of my heart right now? And what is the urging of my soul? And if the two are in harmony, then I know that's where I need to go. If my soul is asking me to do something that my heart doesn't want me to do, then I feel that's an invitation to healing. If my heart wants me to do something that my soul doesn't want, then I start to examine that further with my thinking mind to work out why is there a difference between the two. Because sometimes I think the soul forgets that it's in a body and it wants us to do things that the body isn't quite up to yet, and the body hasn't quite evolved into being. So I examine that, and sometimes it's about having a little bit of time out. Sometimes I'm saying to myself, do you know what, you're going too fast for me, I can't quite keep up. And my soul goes, do you know what, I'm asking you to open up ever wider and ever deeper. So, you know, that's the dynamic that happens, and sometimes I'm like, okay, I can open up ever wider and deeper, and other times I'm like, do you know what, I just need some time out. I'm just even here, please. So that's what I do with my thinking. And then when I'm with others, the first thing that I do when I'm with somebody else is I open up my heart and I send out a wave of really gentle pink energy to their heart. And then I watch how their heart responds to that. So sometimes people's hearts will just open up and just feel like relieved that there's somebody who's willing to touch their heart, you know, because their heart hasn't had a lot of that. Other times the heart is just like, oh, wow, you're doing that. Cool, I'm doing it too, you know, and there's like a connection between the two hearts. And other times the heart is closed. And then I need to work out, you know, do I keep giving that invitation, or do I just withdraw because this heart doesn't want that? And that's okay. So when I'm with other people, this is the first thinking that I have. And I find that this is really helpful because this stops my mind, because I have you know, a really keen and curious intellect, and I do like intellectual rigor, and I, you know, I went to university, so I understand a lot about analytical thinking. But I find that when I do this instead, bring my thinking to my heart in this way, it helps me to, you know, not judge and to not be, you know, analyzing every single thing and getting too much in my head. It helps me come into my heart, as Mary Magdalene says in the Gospel of Mary, perceiving through the eye of the heart. And I see the consciousness as the eye, and that we want to bring that eye down into the heart and then into the soul. So that's really what I'm doing with my thinking as much as I possibly can. Sometimes I get stressed and then I go right up into my head and my thinking might go round and round in circles. So I really ask my thinking to come down into my heart over and over again.
Nice. Never heard it that way. Nice. Question number 12.
You.
You're welcome. Question number 12. What is your self-image?
My self-image is very much this idea that I'm a soul having a human experience. So I really believe that we're all angels, and that we come from the one, from pure spirit, and that in order to go to the next level of our development, we're born into a body. And then we need to interact with that body, and that develops creativity. But it also helps us develop compassion, because we can be humbled by the body. And once upon a time, I didn't even like the concept of being humbled. But now I understand the depths of compassion and connection that being humbled allows us to have. And I think that's what happens. That's what the body teaches us, is that inside the place of limitation where we don't like to be, but often in that place of limitation, we discover greater connection, compassion and understanding for others. And that's very important, particularly for someone like me, because I am so passionate and so driven, and you know, I'm willing to do whatever it takes to get whatever I want. And sometimes that sends me out of balance. So I need to, you know, really surrender to humility, and surrender to the open heart and look for connection, rather than achievement, perhaps, and find a way that achievement and connection can happen together. Because together, of course, we can achieve so much more, and find that place of love and compassion. And I think, you know, human relationships, they really allow us to develop a balance between love and power within us. Because if we're just loving and we're not empowered, we can really be taken advantage of. If we're just empowered and we're not loving, then, you know, we can hurt other people. And so, you know, there's constantly a dynamic balance between our needs and other people's needs, our heart open for compassion, and our empowerment open to achieve. And, you know, achievement is also a tremendous example for others. So achievement can be a very loving thing and a loving gift to give others, because other people can see that they can achieve too. So I think the key thing is for people who have a big, compassionate, open heart, we do need to achieve. Otherwise, only people who don't have an open heart achieve. And then they become our leaders, and then the world becomes a disaster. So it really is important that open-hearted people learn how to achieve and become an example of the fact that you can be loving and empowered, and you can achieve what you want financially, successfully, and in many other ways. Because that is a huge example to others, and often a much, much greater contribution and help than us just helping someone else. And we see that with someone like Oprah Winfrey, where, you know, her example of being a successful woman from a very poor background, with a lot of, you know, racism towards her, and yet she remained a loving person, and she became a very empowered person. And this is the greatest act of love that she's given the world, because we can all see, you know, it is possible to be loving and generous and still achieve exactly what you want for yourself as well. And sometimes this is the greatest loving gift we can give others.
Nice. Pip McKay, where does your supreme confidence come from?
My supreme confidence?
Yes, where does it come from?
Did you say?
Yes, where
supreme
does it
confidence.
Come from?
Okay, well, I feel supremely confident when my confidence is based on the supreme. You know, when my confidence is based on spirit, then nothing rocks you. And as I said before, you know, of course we're all humans. We have all our own things that happen, our own insecurities that happen. And when my confidence is based on the little I, you know, just the little ego, of course I can be racked with insecurity. So I do my best to continue to have confidence in the supreme, in the one, in spirit, And when I do that, I feel confident and at peace and at my most inspired. So that is the best thing to do. And I feel that, you know, we all slip, we're human, and it's okay to be human. When I do feel insecure or I don't feel confident or I feel stressed or I'm nervous, I'm concerned about what somebody else would think of me or think of what I'm saying, I just go, oh, little darling, it's okay, I love you and we're going to be right and we're going to do this together. So it's almost like I step into the bigger eye and I just, you know, see that little eye as just a little child who's got a little bit afraid, and that's okay. We all have that. And so just take that little child by the hand and we do it together. And that's the way I deal with it, rather than putting that child down, because I think if you put that child down inside, at some point the insecurities grow. Just like, you know, if a child's afraid of monsters in the cupboard and you come in and you're angry with the child is going to think not only is there a monster in the cupboard, but there's a monster in my mum or dad as well. So I think it's better to, you know, lovingly take ourselves from fears into confidence, just like a parent who's had enough sleep and is feeling good can take their child into the light.
Nice. Question number 14. What do you know about mindset?
Mindset. You know, our mindset really is based on our belief systems. So a lot of times people see the tiny percentage, you know, 4% of the mindset, which is conscious, and they forget about the 96% of the mindset, which is unconscious. So as much as it's really great to feed the 4%, we're much better off to transform the 96%. And when we transform the 96%, then our mindset becomes a natural reflection of our positive beliefs and our positive emotions and our passion and purpose. And then we don't need to do a lot with mindset because, you know, just like the moon doesn't need to do a lot, you know, the sun shines out and the moon just reflects that light back. And I think that that's what we want to end up with consciousness. A lot of people think that consciousness is the controlling factor. But I really think that our soul needs to be the controlling factor, and then we want our unconscious mind to be full of beliefs and emotions and passion and purpose reflecting the soul. And then our consciousness is just aware, oh, terrific, that's what's there. And then that's what it shows out into the world. And then it's really organic, and we don't need to do much about mindset then, because it naturally follows as an outcome of that. And that's what I think is the best thing to do with mindset. A lot of people are trying to force a particular mindset on themselves, and then they feel a great lack of integrity inside because they don't feel like the mind that they're saying out in the world is the same as the mind that is inside of them. Whereas when we clear the things that create negative mindset, then positive mindset is just a natural outcome. You don't need to do a lot about it then.
Nice. What do you know about states of mind?
Well, I think in the end, we in the Western world have become very separated, our head from our body, from our heart, and from our soul. And so then the mind becomes like monkey mind. It's really affected by things like the media, by other people's opinions, by all sorts of other things, because the head's like floating around without a body. And I think, you know, it's just so important to remember that, you know, the head is attached to the body, and really the head is the outcome of what's going on in the gut, the heart, the soul, the temple, of our soul, which is the body. And So when we bring it all into holistic understanding, then our mind and our brain becomes part of the whole and becomes an integrated part of the whole. And then we work better. Then we use our mind to work out problems in the body. We use our mind to have greater awareness of the body. We use our mind to tune into our soul. We use our mind to tune into our emotions. And then our mind can work out some things to do with that in a way that is harmonious. But for most people, you know, their mind is just constantly on the go, constantly stimulated by technology. And it's important to remember that technology is, you know, human-made. It doesn't come from the divine. I believe that nature comes from the divine and is divine-made. So we need to be careful not to get too unbalanced where we start to worship the human-made things. And then we think that that is the supreme. And when we do that, not only does our body go completely out of balance, but so does the whole world. And we're seeing that right now. And I really feel that coming back to earth, coming back inside the body, coming back to feeding our body with natural earth things, things that are coming from the earth, we come back into the earth and from there we can touch the divine. Whereas if we're just in our head, we build a tower of Babel, you know, or a tower of Babel, conscious mind chatting away to itself, constantly distracted, constantly influenced by external. And we're trying to, you know, build a tower to God with our head, and we're just never going to get there doing it that way. We really need to come back to earth, connect with our heart, connect with our soul, and then our state of mind will come into peace and harmony.
Well stated. Please explain to us what you know about visualization, and please walk us through a thorough example.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, there's two forms of visualization. There's visualization that is human-made, and there's visualization that is divine-inspired. So human-made visualization is where we decide that we want a goal, and then we close our eyes and we imagine that goal the way we want it to be. And look, that is very, very powerful, so long as the goal itself takes into account the purpose of the goal, like I was saying before. You know, we can create a lot of things like that. For me personally, I'm much more interested in divine-inspired visions. And how we get to a divine-inspired vision is through human-made imagination and then becoming inspired and entering into what we might call the imaginal world, where spirit gets to speak to us because we're still enough and open enough. And then we see things that we wouldn't normally see. So as an example, say I'm like, okay, so I want to write a book. Where am I going to get my idea from for what I want to write as a book? You know, that idea could come from, oh, what would be good for my business right now as a marketing tool, right? That would be human-made vision. And then I could go, oh, what's problems that people are having out in the world? You know, what can be a good title for a book that people are going to be attracted to and that will help promote my business? So there's nothing wrong with that. That's really cool. But that doesn't inspire me. I'm not very interested in that approach. I find then I will have no motivation for it. But if instead I go, okay, I want to write a book and I can visualize, you know, a book that I've written and I've got in my hand a book. But now, instead of deciding what's on the cover of the book, I just now open myself up and I just sort of say to my heart, I want you to connect with spirit, and I want you to allow, you know, my spirit to fly through my open heart. You know, what is something out there right now that would be inspiring for me and incredibly transformational for people out there, something new and different, something that is something you want, you know, you as spirit, you want to see expressed in the world. You know, what do you want me to do here? And, you know, the answer may come straight away and I might see, you know, a cover on a book. It might be, say, I see a dove on the book. Say I see an open heart with a dove flying through and I see that on the cover of the book. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's what the cover of the book is going to be. But now it's like, okay, well, what does that mean? What does that mean? You know, seeing spirit flying through the open heart, this is a really important message that we need to open our heart. Okay, so, you know, what might come now? How might I express that? What might that be? And the answer to those questions is going to be totally different for totally different people. And what comes through will be totally different. Now, if what I see on that cover is something I'm expecting to see on the cover of that book, well, that might still be my imagination. And I might want to check in with spirit. Is this what you want me to do? Is there some other way of expressing it? You know, and then maybe it becomes a grail, like a holy grail with a dove coming out of it. And then maybe I see it's Mary Magdalene holding the holy grail with a dove coming out of it. And then maybe, you know, it's a book about Mary Magdalene. Now, you know, that might be, then I'm like, oh, wow, I wouldn't have expected that. And when I have, oh, I wouldn't have expected that, then that's probably more from the imaginal realm. I'm being surprised by what spirit is presenting to me. And this is much more likely to be that. Then, of course, I've got to work out how I can create a bridge between that book and how to market that. I'm going to have to need to use my intellect to work that out. But this is what I want to do at the moment. So I'm actually describing something that I've done quite recently because I'm writing a book right at the moment called Confessions of Mary Magdalene, Conversations with the Goddess. And this was the process that I went through when I was like, you know, I feel drawn to write another book. You know, what will it be? So I'm just going to surrender. And, you know, in amongst this point at the moment when, you know, part of my little eye is going, oh, boy, you know, we need to watch cash flow. You need to be focusing on making sure there's, you know, people coming to your programs and all the rest of it. And then just sort of letting that go and going, okay, what does spirit want me to express in the world at the moment? And, you know, from that process came this, and this is what I'm doing right now. And we launched it just a couple of weeks ago, and now it's an online program. And we had 32 people just enroll. So it was really fantastic. And sometimes our conscious mind can think, how can something spiritual bring me in cash flow? Well, that's what your intellect and your creative mind needs to work out, because you live in a physical world. You know, you still need money. I still need to pay my staff. If I'm going to spend a lot of time doing something, I need to make sure I'm responsible for my staff. I need to make sure I'm responsible for my own capacity to pay, you know, my mortgage and other things in my world. I need to be able to be responsible. That doesn't mean I get rid of spirit. It means I use my creativity to work out how can I still be responsible to all those things in the material plane whilst I bring spirit forth through my open heart. And that's, you know, that's what I do.
You're live on the Sudden Our Impact Show with your host Lee and Pip McKay. You can reach Pip McKay at pipmckay.com.au. You can reach me at BBS Radio. Question number 18. Are you a decision maker or are you a procrastinator? Please explain.
I'm a decision maker. So my issue is pulling back from making too many decisions too quickly. So it's very easy for me to make decisions. I make decisions very quickly. And the reason why I do that is because I trust my unconscious mind. So the first thing that comes up, I pretty much make that decision based on that. I figure that if I make a mistake, then I can learn from that mistake and move forward. But that is much better than not making a quick decision, because, you know, you can delay decision making
and still make the wrong decision. So I figure, like, what's the point of wasting time delaying decision making when I'll probably make more mistakes delaying decision making than I would just making decisions really quickly, knowing that there'll be a certain percentage of those decisions that won't work out. And that is totally cool. But even those decisions that, in inverted commas, are a mistake will lead me to something which will be really powerful in my future. So, you know, some people might have thought, oh, well, Pip, you know, your career as an actor, you know, was that a mistake? I'm like, no, what I learned from acting really helped all my presentations as a speaker. You know, it helped me with storytelling. It helped me with imagination. It helped me know how to stand. It helped me know how to express myself. It helped me with gestures. It helped me with my tone of voice and the way I can use my voice in many different ways. So as far as I'm concerned, you know, when I made the decision to pursue acting, which was quite young, I made that decision when I was about 15, it was Spirit saying to me, hey, this is your path, and the first thing you need to do is develop these skills, and then I'll show you what the rest of the path is. So I just figure, make decisions really quickly and go for it. Learn from any mistakes you make and then go for it again, because this is the fastest way to grow and evolve. And because I'm just too impatient to procrastinate, I get bored too easily to procrastinate. So if I ever feel like, you know, in inverted commas, procrastinating, I know that I'm really, really tired and it's time to just take some time out and rest. So, so my issue is more about doing too much, too quickly, too often, and finding a place of more greater stillness and rest. So procrastination, not really a thing for me.
Nice. Question 19. In your adult life, can you please walk us through one of your business-related defining moments?
Yeah. And so I had a business coach, and this business coach said to me, oh, Pip, you know, you're doing this personal development. You know, you really need a signature program, like a two-day signature program, and you should do that on money and how to help people clear money blocks and, you know, to make more money. And that will really help your business and it will help your marketing. And as much as I think money is a wonderful thing and an incredible tool, I did not feel inspired about creating a weekend like that. And I said to him, do you know what I really want to do? I want to incorporate horse whispering into my personal development programs. And I want people to come and interact on a farm away from all their general life and interact with horses and to really have their deepest, most profound fears come up and to clear those at a deep level. And then I really believe that lots of other things in their life will transform, including finances. And he said to me, that's never going to work. Like, how are you going to make money doing this horse whispering? And now I felt really, really drawn to doing the horse whispering. And for a little while, I attempted to do what he was saying. For a little while, it was one of the very few times I ever procrastinated. I just couldn't bring myself to do it. And so I just decided that his advice might be right for other people, but it was not right for me. And so I let him go as a business coach. I let go the weekend about money. And instead, I created an advanced retreat program, three four-day weekends, where I took people through the principles of consciousness, all the aspects that we need to understand to gain success, love and happiness in harmony, how to gain growth and abundance. So, you know, money and clearing money blocks was incorporated into that. And then how to create transformation and influence. And we also, so we went through each of these archetypes with activities, meditations, clearing processes, like coaching processes. And then we also worked with a with a herd of horses. So you'd use your energy and the horse would walk backwards, and then you draw your energy in and the horse would walk towards you. And people really could see how some horses were walking all over some people because they didn't have any boundaries. And then the horse would go to somebody else and the horse wouldn't behave like that. And there was this undeniable evidence by this huge animal, which has got no other agenda except reflecting back to you what's going on inside. We had people where, you know, they were in domestic violence situations and they were making excuses for their partner, and then the horse is coming and, you know, nibbling on them and pushing them around, and they could suddenly see, oh, wow, because I've got no boundaries, this person is pushing me around. I need to create some boundaries. And then with the horse, you know, we showed people how to create boundaries with their energy, how to create boundaries with their gestures, and how to build those boundaries up slowly so that you're not exploding in somebody's face, you know, but giving them an opportunity to see whether they can respect or not boundaries, and being able to build that up as big as you need to in order to stay safe and protect yourself. We had people who left domestic violence situations because of what they learned from the horses. We had really lovely men who were being bullied at work, being able to create boundaries and end up in a leadership position at that same workplace so that no bullying could take place. We had people who could never ask for, you know, a sale, could never ask for what they really were worth financially, being able to do that because they were able to really step into their own personal empowerment. And those weekends have become like our signature weekends. We've now been doing them for 10 years and they've become one of the reasons why people come to us, because they're so inspired by the stories about the horses, for the breakthroughs that they could never make in any other way, and the magic of connecting to the heart of a horse and seeing how you can interact with a horse that is cooperative, and how you can influence the horse in a really, really loving way, where the horse wants to do what you say rather than is forced to do what you say. And that's become our massive signature program. We've been running that program for a decade now. We were pioneers of how to do that in the coaching space. There were lots of programs like that in the disabled space, which were really, really beautiful, but we wanted to open up the majesty and the magic of horses to just everyday people wanting to make everyday changes. And that's what we've done. We were totally ahead of the curve. Now horses are being used for people coming, you know, Vietnam vets, people coming back from, you know, the Gulf War and all of these other areas, Bosnia, etc., for healing. And we were right at the cutting edge of that here in Australia. So that was a really important business decision where, you know, everything logical was saying I should go down what the business coach was saying, but my heart just couldn't do it. I just had no motivation for it. And then I followed my dream, and nobody else could see how that dream could possibly become a reality and possibly be financially rewarding for us. And it was. I just found a way to make that happen and found how to tell stories about it that inspired people. And we just had people coming from all over the place. and now it's one of the big part of our signature program.
Nice. Like to find out more about that. Question number 20. Where are you currently located spiritually?
Well, I currently feel in a very, very good space spiritually. So I believe, as I said before, in this mother, father, creator, God concept. So I believe that there's a big one, and that one divided into the masculine and the feminine, and that the masculine and the feminine came together and gave birth to everything on the earth, including us. And I believe that we're all sons and daughters of that union. And I feel very, very connected at the moment, as I was saying before, to Mary Magdalene, and, you know, the fact that she was a very powerful and important spiritual leader inside the early Christian church. And I had a big experience in southern France where I ended up accidentally, in inverted commas, in front of the skull of Mary Magdalene in southern France. And she started speaking to me in a very, very powerful manner. And that really was another whole level of my spiritual evolution. And so I speak to her a lot, and she speaks to me and gives me a lot of incredible information, which I've now been sharing with other people. I didn't for a long time, as it was a big experience for me. In 2014 it happened. Then she asked me to bring people to southern France, and in 2015 I brought people to southern France. But some of those people, I don't think were really ready for the spiritual experiences they were having, and were surprisingly quite aggressive towards me. And that really shocked me. And I felt very hurt, both emotionally but also spiritually. I felt like I'm doing what she wants me to do, and yet I feel crucified by these people. But she ended up telling me that I needed to understand the experience that she and Jesus had when they were just spreading a message of love, and that those people who aren't ready for that message, those people who are just in a place of power and in a frightened way attempting to hold on to their power, will never understand a message of love, and that those people will often attempt to crucify those people who are sharing a message of love. And she said, you need to understand that, because when you are sharing and you don't know that that is possible, you share in naivety. That when you share knowing that that is possible, you share with true courage. And so anyway, but it took me a while to recover from that. I did a lot of clearing, but it was a very deep spiritual wound, which I was really surprised by, because the experience itself wasn't such a big deal, but it hurt me much deeper than I was expecting it to. I think because I was so open, I felt so excited about the spiritual revelations I was getting, and to be attacked for them was something I wasn't expecting. So anyway, recently I've really reconnected with her, and she started speaking to me again. So I'm in a really good space spiritually, and I feel connected with her, you know, just about all the time, and it just gives me such a sense of peace in my heart. It gives me a sense of peace about the importance of women, and that women don't have to be just open-hearted, they are also powerful, and that we can have a balance between love and power within the feminine, just like the masculine can have a balance of love and power within the masculine as well. And that there's, you know, I feel this tremendous sense of hope for our world, even in our darkest time. I think we've been through a dark night of the soul, and I feel like we can, if we dig deep enough and if we open ourselves wide enough, we can find the Holy Grail within, and this will completely transform everything in our world. And so at the moment, I'm incredibly excited, passionate, inspired, and I just feel really filled with the light and grace of her. So that's where I'm up to at the moment.
Profoundly stated. Thank you for sharing that. You're live on the Sudden Eye Impact Show with your host Lee and the great Pip McKay, one of the best transformation leaders out there, international best-selling author, world-renowned speaker that shows up on TV and radio regularly, Pip McKay. Question 21, where are you currently located mentally?
Yeah, I'm in a really good place mentally too. You know, it was really interesting. Before I connected with Mary Magdalene again, I was feeling quite despondent. I knew that there was something new coming on the horizon, but I didn't know what it was. And I felt a bit lost. And that's very unusual for me. Normally, I know exactly where I'm going and what I'm doing. But what I found was that gave me a chance to profoundly rest. And I really needed to do that to prepare me for what's coming now. And since I've been bringing through, these messages from Mary Magdalene, my mental clarity is just absolutely extraordinary. And she speaks to me very, very quickly. And a lot of what she says, I don't really understand. And so I've really had to grow my mental capacity to understand the deep and complex symbolism that she's been giving me lately, and to understand what's going on. So my mental capacity has just become like laser focused. I don't think I've had such clarity mentally for a really long time. And, you know, I've often had many places of mental clarity, but it's really at a level at the moment that, well, for me anyway, it's extraordinary. and so that's been really exciting as well.
Nice. Question number 22, where are you currently located relationally?
What was the last word?
Relationally.
Currently located.
Like relationally, like in your relationships?
Relationships are totally fantastic. So, because of the abuse that I experienced when I was a child, relationships, particularly intimate relationships, is not an easy place for me. I tend to repeat patterns. So one of the patterns I would tend to repeat was to be inside an abusive relationship. And the other pattern I would tend to be in would be in a relationship with my dad. You know, my dad was someone who was very loving, really wonderful, but was in a depressed place. And then he died when I was 9. So I would either be in relationships with people who are trying to take advantage of me in some way, or I would be in relationships where the person was really lovely, a bit depressed, and I was trying to help them. And then the moment they felt better, they would leave and the relationship would fall apart, or they wouldn't feel better and they would leave and the relationship would fall apart. And this became my relationship pattern. And because it was so strong, and at that time I, was attempting lots of different things to heal it. In fact, attempting to heal that was part of the reason I created Matrix Therapies. And then I needed to develop Matrix Therapies. I needed to teach it to someone else. They needed to become experienced enough to use Matrix Therapies back on me. And then I was able to heal these things. So it took me a lot longer to heal than, it takes a lot of our course participants. I eventually healed all the emotional and belief structures around relationships, and I really felt ready for a relationship. But then I needed to surrender to spirit, which I did. And then Will, my partner, came into my life about 7 years ago in a really, really magical way. And so that was very, very exciting. And we decided to take things really slowly. We got engaged 18 months into the relationship, but we thought it would be good just to stay engaged for a long time. And we got married on the 2nd of the 2nd, 2020, this year. And it happened to be just 3 weeks before the COVID crisis came about. So we had our wedding with all our family and all our friends there in a big castle here in Manly in Australia. With a horse and carriage and a great big white dress, and then we went on our honeymoon for a couple of weeks, and then COVID came, so we were very lucky and blessed to get that all in. And since that time, my relationship with Will it just gets bigger and better and more wonderful and more exciting. When we have challenges, we're able to communicate through those. Whenever I'm feeling something, once upon a time I would get a bit angry if I felt he was doing something that I didn't like or didn't want. But what I found is much better is if I go into my vulnerable place and I say something like, I felt really hurt the other day when you said this, and I'm wondering what you meant by that, because I actually felt hurt by that. And then he's like, oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to do that. Whereas before I'd be like, why did you speak to me like that in the early stages of our relationship? And then you'd be all defensive. So I found ways of, being vulnerable, coming into that that capacity to just really say the truth of what I'm feeling underneath you know, some of the more expressive or active emotions, like anger or frustration, being able to dip down and come into a deeper place. And that's just been working really beautifully. And then I can see that it's totally fine as a woman who is independent and empowered to be really, really vulnerable. And there's definitely men out there who can hold that emotional space and come to the party. And so our relationship is magnificent. Like I said, it doesn't mean that there aren't times when we might feel, you know, a negative emotion, but we just communicate those negative emotions in a really loving way, talking about our needs, and then it just brings us even closer together. So love is ever deeper and ever wider. It's just magnificent. And my business relationships are all amazing at the moment. Our event manager is incredible. We found the exact right person. I have lots of wonderful people I connect with, like Katrina Friel, and many other of my best friends who I connect with, very stimulating, wonderful. Just everything is really in harmony and at peace in my relationships at the moment. My mum is amazing. She's got kidney disease, and she's 84 now, but she's just an incredible woman, and I'm really inspired by her and have a very close relationship with her and my brother. So it's fabulous.
Wonderful. Thanks for sharing that. As a child, from what you recall, what were your first experiences and memories around the subject and dealing with money?
Ah, yeah. Well, this was a big issue for my family. So my dad lived and worked in Asia, and so he was British consul, so that's a high-up diplomatic position in Indonesia. And in that position, you know, there were servants, there were a massive house, everything was provided, entertainment money was provided, you know, the crockery, the glasses, the chandeliers, absolutely everything was provided. So we looked really wealthy, and I was only really, really young. I was born in Australia, but we then moved to Malaysia. My dad changed position, and we moved to Malaysia there, and we lived in this sort of lap of luxury until I was about 2 or 3 years old. And then we went traveling. So again, everything's really wonderful. It's like there's this abundance of money, but the money wasn't my father's. The money was attached to the position, and he had saved literally nothing ever in his entire life. And then we came to Australia, and Dad couldn't get work. He was overqualified, and he was too old. He was, you know, in his 50s then. At that time, he couldn't enter into the diplomatic service in Australia at the right position. There just wasn't any positions available. And so he was unemployed, and his only job he could get was selling world books door to door, which he could not face. And he would just spend his time sitting in the car smoking because he just could not face the rejection and the humiliation of how far he had fallen as far as his own mind was concerned. So that meant my mum had to go out to work, and we lived in a one-bedroom flat in St Kilda that was so poor that one day I left my teddy bears out on the fence for 5 minutes and they were stolen. So this is like in the 1970s, you know, early 70s, late 60s, early 70s. I mean, where do you live where your teddy bears are stolen? It's just ridiculous. And because of the poverty we were in, that was how the abuser infiltrated our family. So he said that he would help to fix the roof. My grandfather had bought a house for my mum because she couldn't afford anything, and it was all fallen down. It had a leaking roof. And this man came in and said, look, I'll fix your roof cheaply. And then he infiltrated into our family, and that's how the abuse started. So in my life, you know, I had all these very interesting concepts about money. So one was, you know, you can have money and at any point in time it can all be taken away from you. So that was one massive fear I had around money. Then the second one was, you know, it is humiliating to market and sell for money because that's what my dad had happened to him. And then I had a belief that, you know, if you're poor, you're open to be treated any which way, you know, you're open to abuse, you're open to things. So on the one hand, if you have money, it can be taken away at any point in time. And on the other hand, if you don't have any money, you open yourself up, you're vulnerable to abuse. So, I mean, it's like terrible beliefs about money, like really complicated. And so, you know, when I first started my career, I was like a part-time drama teacher. I earned hardly anything at all. I had lots of negative beliefs around, money being evil and all of that sort of stuff. When I set up my own business, I realized I had all these beliefs around selling and marketing and all these very negative beliefs about money. So I spent a lot of time clearing this complex matrix of beliefs about money out so that, you know, I could make money doing what I love and have an abundance and be a great example as a woman who's come from an abusive background that, you know, you can have money in abundance and you can do that in a way that has integrity and, you know, is a wonderful investment for other people in themselves and their own personal development.
Nice. So what emotions come up when you hear the subject or topic of money?
Yeah, well, now I feel a lot of joy around money and the concept of money. I really think money is a fantastic tool. And, money is really simply the value we put on our ideas, our energy, and our creativity. And I value those highly in myself. And at the same time, I want the ideas, the energy, and the creativity that I have to be available to people as well. And so when I think of money, I think of possibilities, I think of potential, I think of our capacity to assist others whilst ensuring that they are self-empowered and are willing to invest in themselves because that's how they value themselves as well. At the same time, I know that, of course, money can be a tool that can bring you a lot of freedom and a lot of happiness so long as that tool is used correctly. So it can also create chasing after money can create feelings of being entrapped. It can create, a sense of being enslaved to people and the process that gives you money. So really, in the end, money is like electricity. You know, electricity can be used to save someone's life, to light your house, to bring heat, to, power your computer so you can reach the world. Or electricity can be used to kill someone or hurt someone or, something negative. So in the end, it's just a tool. And really, just like any tool, whether it's used for good or ill, depends on the person who's using the tool. And that's why I really think that good people need to make friends with money, because when wealthy people have an abundance of money, then there's a lot of good that we can do in the world. When good people have an abundance of money, there's a lot of good we can do in the world. Whereas if the only people who have an abundance of money are selfish people who are only focused on greed, well then, money isn't going to be used in a good and effective way. So good people need to clear negative beliefs about money and need to be able to open themselves up to an abundance of money, because they will use that in a really powerful way. One is an example to others that you can have and do what you want, but also in the projects that they fund.
Nice. What is your attitude, belief, perception, philosophy and psychology around money, and what is your mode of operation with money?
Well, I think the easiest way to sum it up is I think of money like a really, really fantastic relationship. So I think of money as being supportive. I think of money as being loving. I think of money as being generous. I think of money as being, securing and a secure foundation. So if you think of a good personal relationship, I think of money as being loyal. If you think of a good personal relationship and all the qualities you want in a good personal relationship, and then if you think of money in the same way, then just like any relationship, you'll end up having a really good relationship with money. But if you think and believe really negative things about money, then that's what you'll get reflected back. So if you think that money is the root of all evil, if you think that money is, only greedy people have money, if you think all of these things, then this is what we project onto money, then this becomes our relationship with money. Whereas if you think of money as wanting to do good things for you, wanting to ensure that you can eat organic food and you can go on beautiful holidays, if you think of it as this really supportive relationship. So one of the really cool things I think that you can do with money is just write down a really good relationship, a really good loving relationship, and everything that you would expect in that relationship. It could be a platonic, tremendous friendship relationship or more. And you write all those qualities down, and then you look at the beliefs that you have about money. And then you kind of like go, whoa, are they the same or are they different? If they're the same, then you're going to have a really great relationship with money. If they're not the same, you want to look at beliefs that are negative and clear them out using whatever process you can. Obviously, we'd use matrix therapy. And then what you want to do is go, okay, money is supportive. Now, in your mind, you might be going, no, it's not. The moment I have some, it just all disappears. And then you kind of like, okay, in what way could money be supportive? And you sit down and write, whoa, well, money, creates the house that I live in. Wow, that's supportive. Money bought the bed that I sleep in. Gee, that's supportive. Money buys the food that I eat. Wow, that's supportive. Money buys, the jewelry that I enjoy. Gee, that's supportive. Money bought the plants that are in my garden. Wow, that's supportive. Do you know what? Money's bought me a real lot of things. This is amazing. How wonderful. I'm so grateful. Thank you so much, money. And thank you that I've developed this great relationship with money that I can have those things. I'm so grateful. And if you do that with every single one of the things down in the relationship, and then you see how money is doing that for you, you can really improve your relationship with money and have gratitude to the things that money has brought into your life. And then if you think about how can I do what I love and allow the money to come, then, your relationship with money goes to another whole level. So I always say to people, money is not evil. Only people do evil things, and there's only three forms of evil in this world. There is what people do to each other, there is what people do to themselves, and there is what people let other people do to them. And that is the only evil in the world. When we think of a natural disaster, we don't think of that as an evil. Often people call that an act of God. We see evil where somebody has premeditatedly done something to somebody else, or someone's done something to themselves, like their addiction to drugs is so bad that they've really hurt themselves. Or they've let someone do something to themselves. So, for instance, they're in a violent situation, perhaps a domestic violence situation, and they haven't done absolutely everything they can to get themselves and their children out of that environment for whatever reason. So this is what I believe evil is. Money's got nothing to do with those things. In fact, you know, you can use money to assist you not to be in any of those situations. So, no, we want to make friends with money.
Nicely stated. In drawing to a wrap-up, there's nothing cast in stone. Hopefully, the Q&A session was powerful for you, and that Pip McKay's answers can serve as a guide to guide you on how to believe, and if there's error, how to correct the error. And same thing with thinking, how as a guide, how to think. So if you're in erroneous thinking or wrong thinking, you can make the necessary adjustments. Because Pip has been very transparent with you. She's been personable with you. She's been truthful with you. And in saying that, lower consciousness annihilates truth. Pip McKay has shared with you her truth. And you cannot manifest from a place of not being present, not being clear, not being authentic, not being connected to Mother Earth, not being aware, and not having your heart and mind open to receive. Your focus has been on distortion, and you've been in a continual state of delusion. Snap out of it. Become present. Become authentic. On the Ark of Al-Delphi, it says, to thy own self be true. If you're not true with yourself, it's impossible to be truthful with anyone else. Listen deeply. Speak truthfully and act creatively. Be the change that you want to see. First, you will change you. Then you will change your world, and everything in it will change. And until the next time, continue to do what you know to do and use your faith.
Discover the power of positivity. Identify your gifts. Then plan and execute your passion. And ultimately, thrive exponentially in life and most importantly in business. On Sudden Eye Impact. With your host, Lee.